Hey everybody,
you're here.
Where is here? Wherever you are.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we're here too, you know?
We are here.
With you.
And where is here, really?
Where we are.
In this room.
And where you are.
With you.
Wherever you happen to be.
In your ears.
In your lives.
In your homes.
In your stomachs.
Wherever you are.
We're two tiny bacteria infecting you.
What? Hey, everybody. This is Magic the Amateuring.
Yes.
An infection.
Some people call us the best infection.
The best infection you could get.
Hello, doctor. I'm worried I have an infection.
Oh, what infection is that?
I think it's the Magic the Amateuring infection.
Nah, don't do anything about it. It's the best infection you could have.
Oh, well, all right then.
I have a medical degree.
See you later.
Bye. I'm one of your hosts, Megan.
I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
This is a podcast.
It sure is all about Magic the Gathering.
Whether you're new to the game, returning to the game, or you play the game.
Yeah, any of those categories. Just
any
fine.
Any one of them works out just all right.
And we have a very special show for you this week that only happens a few times every year.
That's right, because it only happens when a new set is about to pre-release.
And do you know what the best time in Magic is?
When?
When a new set comes out!
It's so true! So, who do we have?
On this week's episode, we are welcoming back Judge Rob
to the show. Hey, Judge Rob!
Oh, hi!
I mean, we're going to say more things, so you can just go back to reading.
You can keep reading.
Oh, okay.
What's your book?
I'm rereading The Quantum Thief because I haven't finished the full trilogy.
All right.
Oh, nice.
So that's Quantum Thief. It's really complicated. Mm-hmm. I don't want to try that hard.
Yes, yes. We will be talking to Judge Rob in this episode, who gives us all the wonderful insights on the rules and mechanics and card interactions that you may find a little bit tricky at your pre-release.
That's right. He'll be answering some questions some of you sent in.
Yeah, Rob is the real deal. He's a regional coordinator up here in the north.
Yeah.
So we don't just get...
The North?
Well, that's our region, is the North region.
Wow. It's way more all-encompassing than I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We don't just get any
Does
road.
Does it include Canada?
No.
Okay. Well, what do we call Canada then?
Rob, technically, what do we call Canada?
What do we call Canada?
Canada.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Canada's its own region.
Okay.
Enough. I suppose.
But before we get into all these sorts of tricky little bits and pieces with the new set, Aether Revolt, we have some people to thank, including you.
That's right. To all of you who support us on Patreon, thank you so much. It really does mean so much to us. You literally keep that light over there on, that camera in front of us rolling, these microphones doing whatever magic microphones do.
That's so true. And so welcome to the Less Than 1% Club, everybody who joined our show this past month. Thank you so much, all of you new members. And just to say thank you, we've made a new perk for anybody who joins Patreon at any level from $1 to $10. You can now join in our Discord chat.
That's right. It's a special chat where you can chat with other patrons about different cards. You can query us.
Yeah, we're in that chat.
Yeah, we're in that chat and we will query back.
Ask us a question. We're not going to answer it.
We will ask you a question that could also be interpreted as an answer depending on how you take it.
Super easy to use. It's just like Slack if you use that at work or whatever. We have fun little emojis that we're going to put in the chat and everything. So head on over, become a member at patreon.com/mtacast and get in on the chats.
Yeah. Thank you, of course, also to our sponsor,
Card Kingdom.
Cardkingdom.com/mtacast. The sickest place to pick up all of your sick magic products.
And guess what? They have a super sick contest going on right now.
What?
Where if you buy a box or anything containing a box of Aether Revolt, you are entered to win every single invention in the set.
You're telling me that they're giving away a set of every that's every invention?
Yeah, every invention. What? Do you want to be living in a room of gold?
Because you could. You could be. That's amazing.
I know, it's really cool. I went over and looked at it, and I was just like, you know, drooling on my keyboard at work. I had to get a new keyboard. It was really awkward. What do you say to IT? I spilled my water.
How do you expense report that? You're like, keyboard, comma, because I drooled on mine.
Because drool. So head on over to cardkingdom.com/MTAcast to buy a box, enter the contest, or just get some singles because guess what? The whole set is out now. So start brewing, everybody.
Yeah.
Megan and I, we're going to record a video as well for our newly invigorated YouTube channel.
That's right.
YouTube.com/MTAcast, where we're going to do, what is it, the top 10 worst cards in Aether Revolt sealed.
Yeah, that's so right.
What to recognize as terrible and don't put it in your in your pre-release deck, okay?
Before you head out to that pre-release, watch it.
So just
you
watch
can
it.
Be like, hey, this is a trap.
Yeah, so that'll be up on our YouTube channel sometime this week. If you subscribe, it'll ping you when it goes up so you can check it out. It's going to be a great vid.
Word up.
Welcome to the show, Judge Rob.
Yay! Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming back. Mm-hmm.
We always worry every time that we've scared you just a little bit too much.
Well, I usually don't get scared. I get concerned.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
We're
that
an sounds... infection.
you're an infection, and then you have all these phobias, and you have all these interesting decisions about what your show is about for any given time.
That's true.
Yeah, no, it's very true. It's very true.
What is that song? You're My Favorite Disease? Is that a song?
Favorite Mistake?
Wow, you misremembered that one.
No, I'm remembering something else, but I'm remembering it super wrong.
These are a few of my favorite diseases.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. Starring Maria in The Sound of Music.
When you frostbite.
When the bees
sting.
No, I'm not mixing in favorite
when
things.
When you have the flu. I simply remember my favorite infections. And then I don't feel so good.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rob, you're here to tell us all about everything that's happening in Aether Revolt. First of all, I'd like to ask you broad questions up top. This is a small set, so we're not going to see as many cards as we did before.
Yeah. Yep.
But overall, how do you find the complexity of this set, looking at it as a judge?
So, looking at it as a judge, there's a couple of cards that pull out individual interesting things, but on a whole, everything just does what it says. The two new mechanics are variants on old mechanics, and the interesting things are more tied up in how these cards interact with other cards in Standard. So, like, Sealed on its own is not going to do a lot of like, complicated, weird things.
All right.
That's good.
That is good.
Yeah, people will be able to read cards and have a reasonable idea of what they do.
I think it's called RTFC.
Yes.
The technical
read the
term.
Friendly card.
The friendly card.
This card is quite friendly. Yes.
Let's start off with mechanics in the set. There's really only a couple of things that are new, but they are also reminiscent of some old mechanics.
There's the two returning things, obviously. There's energy and vehicles. Yes. They behave exactly the same as they did before. You get energy counters. Energy counters are things on players. And as a result, things that add counters to players, there's a green card that adds a counter to a player of a type that player already has, will give you an energy counter.
Oh, sweet.
It'll also let you poison your opponent.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's going to be sweet.
So there's a handful of things like that. There's new vehicles that are just vehicles that behave the same as the old ones.
Notably, no Fabricate in this set as well.
There's no Fabricate. So there was actually a comment that Mark Rosewater made in his article today, or yesterday, is that they ran out of interesting power toughness and mana cost combinations that would work really well with Fabricate. And so they were like, we just used them all in the first set. And I'm like, okay.
That's fine.
Seems reasonable.
Yeah, seems about right.
Yep, had a good run. and then the two new ones are variants on old mechanics. There's Improvise, which is a sweet mechanic. It's like halfway between Affinity for Artifacts and Convoke.
Yeah.
If you remember either of those things. So Improvise says, your artifacts can help cast this spell. It goes on any type of thing except lands, instant sorceries, creatures, whatever. Each artifact you tap after you're done activating mana abilities pays for one colorless mana. So just like Affinity for Artifacts, it only hits colorless mana.
Okay.
So if you have say War of Invention here, which is an instant for blue, and X, Improvise, and search your library for an artifact card with converted mana cost X or less, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. And so it behaves like Convoke in that you tap a bunch of things to do it, and it behaves like Affinity in that it only decreases the colorless cost.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. And it, because it's such an open, broad mechanic, it goes on a whole bunch of different things. It's on a demon, it's on this war of invention, it's on random creatures, it's on sorceries, it's on just arbitrary artifacts.
It's on our card that we
our
get to preview.
Our preview card, yeah.
Yeah.
And the one thing to note with it is you can pay for any types of cost with it. So if something increases the cost of everything, you can still pay for that cost with it. There's... Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, increases the cost of non-creature spells by one colorless mana.
Okay.
And Improvise you can use to pay for costs like...
Oh, that's interesting.
Awesome.
And it doesn't decrease the cost. It's actually paying for costs.
Okay.
There's one card that'll care about that, Trinisphere, because it says that you have to have paid at least some amount of mana, and you're actually paying for that mana by tapping artifacts.
Okay.
But those are not likely to come up. Trinisphere is in the inventions, so it's possible that you might have to improvise through a Trinisphere.
Okay, that is good to know.
Yep.
But so you can improvise
You can improvise
through,
through
it.
A Trinisphere, yep.
Wow.
It's
sounds like it's a radical set of, you know, conditions to improvise under, but that's what you gotta do.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is that the inventions actually have the interesting interactions. Sphere of Resistance increases the cost of all spells by one.
Okay.
And so you can use Improvise to pay for the Sphere of Resistance increased cost.
Okay.
Very cool.
So those are things that could conceivably come up in your limited play.
Yeah.
Good
to know.
Yep. Then we have Revolt. We're going to stage a revolution.
Yeah, we are.
Revolt's an ability word, which means it's basically flavor text. It's italicized, and it comes at the front of an ability.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean anything by itself. It's just kind of like a reminder that when this happens, do something.
Yeah. All revolt cards behave pretty similarly. They all say if a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn, then this effect it'll be bigger or it'll be better or it'll have a new effect that it won't have at all.
Ooh.
Sweet.
So for instance, Call to Unity is an enchantment. Costs white 3. It only has, its first ability is Revolt. At the beginning of your end step, if a permanent you controlled left the battlefield this turn, put a unity counter on Call for Unity. And then its second ability is creatures you control get +1/+1 for each unity counter on Call for Unity.
Mm.
So it counts itself up pretty high and starts just being a super anthem at some point.
Yeah.
It is really similar to an old mechanic, Morbid, that said if a creature died this turn, do its thing. The difference is Revolt only cares about your permanents.
Not your opponent's.
Yep. It doesn't care about creatures. It only cares about your stuff. So if you kill your opponent's creature, you won't get to Revolt.
Yeah.
You only revolt when your opponent kills your stuff. Revolt, it does a variety of things in a variety of different cards, but it's always based on things leaving the battlefield.
Mm.
And
notably, it's any permanent that you control. So people were saying, you know, like
Fetch lands seem amazing.
Goodbye land. Hello, revolt.
Yeah, that's sometimes why people revolt in the first place.
Yeah, because their land got taken.
Yeah,
taken away. Yep.
Very flavorful.
Very flavorful.
Sounds historical. there's a lot of cards that are going to see play in Modern, I think, or at least tried out in Modern.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Revolt is a very powerful ability.
Yeah.
The other stuff that's going on in this set is just really interesting things related to artifacts. Historically, artifact-driven sets have had really open, weird, interesting cards in them. They're deck builders and Johnny Player's Paradises that have things that you never see otherwise. Just strange, oddball abilities.
And usually things that end up being broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Or they just end up being historical footnotes and curiosities.
That's what I want on my tombstone.
Yes. For real, is a historical footnote and a curiosity.
That's actually great. I kind of love it.
You can't have it when you can't be a historical footnote when you die, though. Like, you just died. You're not history yet.
A historical footnote. I love it because it's like, you did nothing.
No, you didn't do enough for us to write you into the book. But we'll
put a footnote in somewhere. Yeah.
You didn't make the main chapter. You don't need to study. Studied in order to pass a test.
They will not get tested on your name, but you'll be in there with a little asterisk.
And I know that there is something in this set that allows you to sort of cast cards for free.
Yeah, there's the expertise cycle. So there's a cycle of legendary creatures that one in each color, and then there's a cycle of those creatures' expertises. They're all like excellent engineers or super revolutionaries or
in Yeheni's case, just great at murdering people.
Yeah.
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 No, I think she's just a pirate. I think she's just an awesome pirate. Are you looking at Carrie Zev?
No, I was looking at Yeheni.
Oh, Yeheni?
Yeah.
Oh, Undying Partisan? I think he's a revolutionary.
I think that they're a great murderer.
I mean, that's more than a historical footnote.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeheni is way bigger than a historical footnote.
That's fair. But so there's this cycle of legendary creatures that are all super sweet, and then they each are experts at something. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, Yeheni's expertise is black 2 for a sorcery. All creatures get -3/-3 until end of turn.
A great
murderer. Don't even talk about this card. Megan's just going to...
It seems fine. I'd play that.
Yeah.
In some standards, it's a little worse than Languish.
Yeah.
But, I mean, sometimes you need -3/-3.
Sometimes you need a little worse than a Languish.
And then it says, you may cast a card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost.
Yes. Boo.
So the really neat thing about the expertise is all of the legendary creatures cost 1 less than the expertise, and all the expertise cost things that cost 1 less than them.
Whoa!
So the expertise will always cast their own related legend. Oh,
sick. They all cost at least 1 less.
At least 1 less. Yeah, yeah. So for instance, Rishkar Pima Renegade is the green one. He only costs 3 where his expertise costs 6. But they all cost less so that you can, like, Yeheni's the closest one at 3 to 4.
It's almost like they thought of it.
Yep, they want you to be able to cast the legend for free with that legend's expertise.
That's kind of cool.
That's pretty sweet.
The most interesting one of them is actually Rishkar's expertise, I think. Mm-hmm. Green 4, sorcery. Draw cards equal to the greatest power among creatures you control, and then you may cast a card with a converted mana cost 5 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. Mm. You can cast it out of the cards you just drew with the expertise. Yum.
Cool.
So if you have like a 4/4 and no creatures in your hand and you blind cast Rishkar's expertise, draw 4 cards, and you find a creature to cast, you can cast it.
Nice. Sick. And I know this is going to be one of the questions that we've gotten from people, but I'll ask it now. Can you cast a card, a split card, with one of these?
So when you look at a split card, it'll ask, is my converted mana cost 3 or less? And the split card sometimes will produce 2 answers. It'll say both yes and no. Well, we only care about the yes.
Right.
So if the split card has at least one side that costs less, then you'd be able to cast it with the expertise.
And say it was something like Boom Bust is one that comes up with Goblin Dark Dwellers. Yep. So Boom would say yes, and Bust would be like, no, but you could cast Bust
because it says yes. Yeah. Anytime that you try to cast a split card, you choose which side you cast.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Nice.
And the note is that you just follow the instructions in order. So the Rishkar's expertise, it's draw cards and then get something for free. Mm-hmm. With Beryl's expertise, it's possible that you can pick up an artifact and recast it because it returns up to 3 target artifacts and/or creatures to their owner's hands.
Yeah.
So you could use it to like pick up your own puzzle knot and then recast it for some more energy.
Mm. And in the case of Yeheni's expertise, notably, like if you cast a creature with it,
that it'll survive.
It's not going to have -3/-3. Which was also a question
that
we had about it.
And so it's just, you do the things in order, just like with most spells.
Yeah.
Do the full instruction, then full instruction.
Yeah. Just like in life, you know, you can't die before you've lived unless you have a really
unless
sad
you,
life.
Yeah. Yes.
You could be a footnote that died before you lived.
So, well, you know, these look awesome. Like they always say, it's not busted when you can cast something for free.
Yeah.
Classically not busted.
I think that you have an extra word in there that is probably wrong.
But I don't understand what you're saying. Classically not busted cards.
I mean, there's a reason they fixed Affinity into Improvise, right?
Into Improvise, yeah.
Because you can only use it once per turn.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when you see things like this having a longer lens on the history of magic than we kind of do in our experience, are you just like, this is going to end poorly for everyone?
So, honestly, I think that this is the fairest free spells that they've ever printed because you still have to pay a bunch of mana and you don't, like, so Urza's Saga had a cycle of spells that untapped your lands. Mm-hmm. And so they were free. They oftentimes cost less than 0 because you untap lands that tap for more than 1 mana.
Oh boy.
And it turns out that having them cost negative mana is a problem. This doesn't have that going on. You only get one thing. Mm-hmm. You're limited to another random card. You still had to pay an upfront cost, and it doesn't leave you with the ability to just open and to do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
they're still very powerful. And they want to print powerful things because they want to be excited about magic.
Yeah.
And so if they don't take risks, then they don't produce interesting cards. And sometimes they goof up and ban cards in standard, which is fine.
Goodbye, Emrakul.
Which was a theoretical thing I said for years because they hadn't banned cards in standard for a while. Yeah. No, they did.
Our old tentacled friend.
Yeah. Yes, Emrakul, enjoy your retirement.
May your sloopy arms find room enough in the moon.
At least they retired her with a car.
Yeah, that's true. You think that Emrakul is in the blind eternities piloting a looter scooter?
Yeah. Like, she could probably only fit one tentacle in there. Driving it, just kind of.
You ever raced RC cars? It's fun, right?
That is what it would be like. Yep.
What other cards do you have earmarked as like, hey, these are some interesting interactions or questions that might come up?
So the Aethertide Whale is a cool, cool guy. He costs blue 4 for a 6/4 flying whale. When he enters the battlefield, you get 6 energy counters. Mm. Then you pay 4 energy counters to return Aethertide Whale to its owner's hand.
So that it's never dying.
Well, there's a trick. That make energy counters is a trigger.
Ooh.
So if your opponent has a removal spell they can cast it in response to the trigger and kill your whale.
Get it done, everybody. You'll
still get 6 energy. And so be aware, your opponent will still get 6 energy for casting their whale.
Yeah.
But
you can kill it
in response. But the whale will not be around.
You'll still be able to kill the whale. Which
to
is my,
enjoy its...
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be very flavorful if Skywheeler Shot couldn't get this.
Kill the whale.
That's true. Yeah. If it was like... And it just missed.
Yeah.
It just missed. Cool. I would actually prefer that.
You know what,
I am pro whales.
What if it
anti-whaling industry on Kaladesh?
Roll a dice. If you roll an even number, you get your shot. And if you roll an odd number, you miss.
That card becomes terrible.
No, but it's got to be, like, say it only costs, like, 2 or something.
What? It would have to cost 1, and then I would only sometimes play it.
They would probably actually, instead of rolling dice, use the top card of your library.
Oh, yeah.
So it'd be like... Reveal the top card of your library if it has an even converted mana cost, which in 0 is even.
That'd you be get land, to kill a yeah. thing.
Ooh, well, and that would make it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. So you get to control the randomness a little bit. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that card design would be cool. And everybody out there who's a fan of the show knows that I design cards quite regularly. So just think about it is all I'm saying.
I'm going to touch on a couple of the mythics. Exquisite Archangel.
Ooh.
So it's a white 5 for a 5/5 flying angel.
Mm-hmm.
If you would lose the game, instead exile Exquisite Archangel and your life total becomes equal to your starting life total.
That's nutty. Boy.
It seems really cool. They've done things like this before that say if you'd lose the game, do something else instead.
Yes.
If you die from something that isn't damage, you probably still die.
Gotcha. So if it was like poison counters,
you would fail to lose the game.
Archangel would be like
she would save you once and then you die again immediately.
Yes.
She saves you from failing to draw a card on an empty library once as well.
I didn't even think about that.
And then the next time you try to draw a card, you would still die, but you wouldn't die immediately.
But you get one turn.
Yeah, you get one freebie from Exquisite Archangel.
Weird. Wow. That's so weird.
So, yeah, because of the way that losing the game works, you lose the game since the last time that you state-based actions were checked, it's a technical thing.
Yeah.
If the last time state-based actions were checked, since then you've tried to draw a card and you had no cards to draw, you lose. But it's just a one-shot loss. So.
I just love the idea.
That's cool.
The rules text, if you would lose the game, do something else instead.
Do something. Yeah.
You can replace things with anything you want.
Do something.
Yeah.
I don't feel like losing the game right now.
No, I'm going to do something else.
I'm
going
to drink some of my delicious tea instead.
Yeah, I would like to eat a dry piece of toast, please. Apparently, like a lot of our listeners do.
Apparently, lots of people. BT Dubs, you owe me $5.
Yeah, I do. Big time. But do I have to eat my shorts? I can't remember what I said I'd eat my shorts for.
If
people like dry toast?
No, that wasn't.
No, Megan bet me $5.
I feel like it was a situation
toast.
In which you needed to eat your shorts.
Already?
I think you did.
Oh, boy.
What was it?
I don't know.
Did you bet your shorts that you couldn't eat your shorts?
No,
she bet
it was
something. She
about
was like,
magic.
If this doesn't, I'll eat my shorts.
Hmm. Was it about the bands?
Because we didn't know yet.
Eating my shorts over what happened with the ban list.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't we all?
Well, we're gonna
hop to
the next card.
Digressing.
Mechanized Production, which might be the most interesting card in the set, honestly.
Yeah, this one is cool.
So blue 2, enchantment aura, enchant artifact you control. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of enchanted artifact. Then, if you control 8 or more artifacts with the same name as one another, you win the game. So Mechanized Production can go on any artifact at all, and the trigger condition is what lets you win or lose the game, but it doesn't care if those artifacts match the thing that you're copied with Mechanized Production.
So they can be anything.
They can be anything. Notably clues. It doesn't care if it's the same name as the thing enchanted by Mechanized Production.
Oh. It can be 8 of whatever.
Anything. So if you collect artifact. 8 clues of the Mechanized Production on the battlefield, even if it's attached to something else, you win. Yep.
But it has to go through the upkeep trigger.
Yes, it has to. It only happens when the upkeep trigger resolves. Fair warning, Tomio's Journal makes clues at a pretty fast clip. Seems awesome. It's legendary.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you'll
you're
try
right.
to make a Tomio's Journal every upkeep and then lose your bonus journal. Oh. Because you'll have a Tomio's Journal and a legendary Tomio's Journal.
Oh.
They seem to have thought of this, or maybe they just decided it was cooler to be legendary.
Yeah. Well, Tamio can only keep one journal at a time.
Pretty legendary.
That's crap.
She's a busy scientist.
She's a librarian and a researcher. She should have a whole library full of
library.
Journals.
Tamio's library of journals.
Yes.
She's a planeswalker and a powerful mage. Obviously, her journal is like a Mary Poppins bag of pages.
And that's why you can pull out clues all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Where it's just like that journal is never full. There's always a blank page to write on, and you can always flip back to all of your earlier research. I just invented something cool.
That seems pretty great.
I think it's probably just like there's probably magical books like that in D&D.
Yeah, right. That would make sense.
Somebody asked a question related to this card with Mirror Weave, which is from a commander set?
No. Well, it was originally
Shadowmoor.
In Shadowmoor.
Yeah. Each, which is an instant for 2 hybrid white-blue mana, Each other creature becomes a copy of target non-legendary creature until end of turn.
So if you were going to try to win the game with Mirror Weave and in this, then what you would have to do is put the trigger on the stack and then make everything into a copy of an artifact. And you would still need at least 8 things.
Okay.
Becoming a copy means that you get all of the characteristics of that thing as
your base. Including its name.
Yeah, including its name. Basically, okay. you replace your undercard or the card with that card temporarily. And other effects will apply on top of it or whatever. But Mirror Weave is a weird, weird card.
Yeah. The art is creeping me out
The art is really creepy. What is up with their eyes?
Oh, they're part of Thought Weft, which is a psychic bond that allows Kithkin to share thoughts with each other.
What?
But what Mirror Weave is showing is when Thought Weft goes bad, the Shadowmoor Eventide is the evil version.
Everything goes bad.
So, no, everyone's an evil hive mind.
They're like the Borg. Kithkin.
Yeah.
Oof.
That's, oh man, I love this set. The more I learn about this set, the more I like Shadowmoor and Lorwyn.
Lorwyn, Shadowmoor,
Eventide?
Yeah, Eventide. Lorwyn, Morningtide, and then Shadowmoor, Eventide.
Oh, okay.
If Shadowmoor, Eventide would have been a sensible pair of sets, it'd be incredible. But Eventide is not a good follow-up to Shadowmoor. I have opinions.
It's okay, you're allowed. Okay. You're a human being.
Yep, yes.
I want to move on to a green card now that we talked about some blue cards.
Yes.
Greenbelt Rampager. It's a 3/4 elephant for single green.
Yes. Yeah, and we misspoke about this on the show last week.
We did. I was missing.
So when it enters the battlefield, you pay 2 energy.
Yes.
If you can't, return Greenbelt Rampager to its owner's hand and you get energy.
Okay.
You must pay 2 energy if you have 2 energy. Is the notable thing.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So if you have 2 energy, you just can't use it to pay green to get a single energy over and over. Eventually, you'll get to 2 energy, and then
you have to cast it.
The fun thing, this elephant drives cars like a champion.
It does.
Greenbelt Rampager, put the trigger on the stack, and then crew a vehicle in response.
Oh my god!
Then it returns to your hand.
That's insane! I didn't even think of that!
Wow.
So
this elephant's like, I got this, guys.
Isn't there one in this, like a super low cost, like Heart of Kirin
Heart of Kirin is a real
crew 3. Yeah. It's 2 mana and it says crew 3.
Crew 3.
Guess what? Elephant drives Heart of Kirin.
Yeah, it does. An elephant is driving Chandra's dad's car.
Yep.
As nature intended.
As nature
hides
intended.
In your hands, they can't kill it.
So let me just make sure that I'm right then when I'm saying that you could potentially play the elephant on turn two if you had two forests. So you would play it on turn one. Yeah. It would go back to your hand. Yep. You would get the energy.
Yep.
Second turn two, you'd do the same thing, come back to your hand, and then you would play it again.
Yep.
And it would be fine.
Yep. Okay. And you would have spent three green for your 3/4.
Yes.
Which is a reasonably fair rate.
And you have it down like on turn two.
Yeah.
What did we miss say about it?
We said that was not possible.
That what was not possible?
To play it on turn two.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because you need to have paid, as long as you've cast it on turn one to bounce for an energy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I predict
scary that about
this card is going to be really good at standard. It does a lot of stuff. And it makes me extraordinarily glad they banned Emrakul, because Aetherorks would be a very, very crazy deck with this card in it.
Yeah, you're right. I too, Rob, think that a deck will come out of this. At least I hope. I think it'd be kind of cool. Well, but maybe it triggers
revolt. It drives cars. It makes you energy. It does everything the set is wanting to do.
It cleans up spills.
Yep.
It gets things from high shelves.
It's a floor wax and a dessert topping.
Are we talking about like whipped cream?
I was thinking of like a ShamWow and then like an extendable Richo arm. I don't really know what you're talking about.
No. It's, this is a reference to a comedy sketch that you may have never seen.
Oh, okay. No.
By what group, though? Just tell me that.
I'd have to go digging, actually. Okay. No, I don't remember.
But, like, for reals, I've cleaned my floors with Cool Whip, so.
Okay.
Really?
No.
It sounded so real.
So I just believe you now when you say things.
Thank you.
That's very dangerous, Rob.
That's all I want. That's all I want is to be believed.
Oh, well, that's cool. I mean, you mentioned too earlier about the card that makes you energy or makes you mana when it comes into play. That was another.
The whale.
The whale. Yeah, right. We talked about the whale.
Yeah, we talked about Aethertide Whale.
Okay.
And Aethertide Whale, if you have unlimited mana, will net you infinite energy. But that, I mean, that's, if you have unlimited mana, you can do whatever you want.
And I mean, it goes without saying, probably for most people, that there is an infinite combo in this set.
Yep.
Which you can get, you know, in your sealed pool, you might get it.
Yep.
Ooh.
Saheeli Rai from Kaladesh, and Felidar something. I don't remember what.
Guardian.
It's Felidar Guardian.
It's a little dog with antlers.
It's a cat. It's a cat beast.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because people want to call the deck Crazy Cat Lady.
Yep. Felidar Ben Cats. Felidar.
That's pretty good.
So Felidar Guardian's a 1/4 cat beast for white and three.
Oh,
when it enters the battlefield, you may exile another target permanent you control. Excuse me. Then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. So it sends a thing away and brings it back right away. People call this flickering.
Yeah.
And Saheeli has one of her abilities is exile target non-land permanent. Make a copy of target artifact or creature. It's an artifact in addition to its other types until end of turn. So you make a hasty token copy. Right. It gets haste. It's an artifact. I don't have Saheeli in front of me, so I'm kind of improvising the text.
Hold on, it makes
a temporary token copy of a thing. And so you'll make a copy of Felidar Guardian. And then you will put it back on the battlefield. Yeah, her minus two.
Create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. That token gains haste, exile at the beginning of the next end step.
Yep. And so Saheeli costs three and Felidar Guardian costs four. You can actually, on turn four, play Felidar Guardian, make a copy of Saheeli, exile Saheeli, and return it right away. She's a fresh new Saheeli, and so you can use her ability again.
I see. Okay.
To make another cat. People are calling this really close to Splinter Twin. Which is a combo that was a big deal in Modern for a long time, and got banned. And this is fairly powerful. It is disruptible. It's possible to beat it with like a shock.
Yeah,
which is in this set.
Because someone asked this.
Yeah.
So obviously, like shock, which is two damage, doesn't kill Felidar Guardian because it's a 1/4. But so the minus two ability.
Yep.
You remove the loyalty counters, but the ability still goes on the stack. So you can kill her.
There's a couple of different places where you can kill her, actually. I think the best way is, so if my opponent uses Saheeli and minuses, makes a copy of Felidar Guardian, I let them do that. That resolves. Felidar comes out and targets Saheeli. because that way your Felidar Guardian copy can't target something else to flicker it.
Okay.
And so then target Saheeli, locks them in on that, and then you're like, all right, shock Saheeli.
Nice.
With that trigger on the stack.
Yeah.
And then they just got two stupid 1/4s.
Yeah. That's right.
One of them is haste, it can attack.
Oh no, I'm going to get hit by a 1/4.
Well, that's really handy to know, because I actually have never played against Splinter Twin. I think I played against Kiki Jiki Resto Angel.
I played against that one.
And I didn't know what to do. This was my first modern tournament, and I just kind of looked at it, and I was like,
The answer is have instant speed removal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, playing Boggles, you're probably not going to have that.
What? That's why you play
your path to exile. Yep. Yeah. I wasn't playing any at that time. I have a new deck tech on Boggles, youtube.com/mtacast. It does have path in it, but I didn't in Omaha for whatever reason. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's handy to know. I mean, it's probably not going to come up, but it's good to know.
And it'll come up in standard. If you start playing standard, like, even if this isn't any good, people will play it anyways because it seems fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to go out and play at FNMs, you'll see fun things at FNMs, and you'll also see good things. And if this ends up being good, then it ends up being good. I predict that if this does end up being good, then so part of the banned and restricted announcement that they made yesterday is they said that they are changing the banned and restricted schedule.
So we get another one in just 5 weeks after the Pro Tour.
Yep. So what it used to be is once a quarter, so four times a year, they do banned and restricted announcements. Now they added a bonus once, and now there's 8 a year. And it's just 5 weeks after the Pro Tour, once they've had the chance to see the Pro Tour results and a few Grand Prix, they can ban and restrict stuff or unban.
So there's 8 of these, and every top 8, they'll be like, goodbye.
Goodbye forever.
No.
Yeah, if they're like, there's only one deck in standard, they'll ban that deck.
Goodbye.
They did it to Affinity, and Affinity was only 45% of the decks in standard.
45%?
Wow. It was a different time.
It was a different time. Oh, boy.
My, oh, my.
Yeah, and when I was trying to remember which card, there was like 65% of decks.
What?
That people were thinking that they were going to ban, but they didn't.
When?
Just the other day.
What?
From in standard?
In what format?
Standard. But I can't standard? Remember.
It would have been one of the ones.
It would have been one of the ones.
It would have been one of
the ones. It had a higher percentage than Copter?
It couldn't have.
Maybe I read something wrong.
Okay. It's like 65% seems like about the numbers that Copter would
get. Yeah, was in.
Yeah.
Or Ishike?
I don't remember. Anyway.
But Ishike was in Emrakul decks and in Marvel decks, so that it got hit anyways.
Very possibly.
Do you have other cards that you think that have jumped out at you as presenting potential problems?
There's a bunch of weird ones that have a lot of corner case stuff, but for the most part in limited, they don't do a lot of strange things. There's to note, there's a couple of rebels. There's Quicksmith Rebel and what is the blue rebel? Quicksmith Spy. Sorry, they're Quicksmiths.
Yeah.
And they both have a when this enters the battlefield, target artifact you control gains a tap ability for as long as you control that Quicksmith. So Quicksmith Spy is a 2/3 for blue and 3. When it enters the battlefield, target artifact you control gets tap, draw a card for as long as you control Quicksmith. It seems amazing, right?
Yeah.
The caveats are this is a separate ability, so if the artifact has another tap ability, it can't do both that tap ability and this. And if it's an artifact creature, it's going to need haste to be able to use that the turn it comes out.
Makes sense.
So if you play both if you get a servo token from something and then cast Quicksmith Spy and make your servo able to tap draw cards, it's a great servo, but it can't do it the turn it comes out.
You're a great little servo. But you gotta calm down.
Yep.
I remember we had a question, Megan, from an earlier episode.
Yes.
Which was with, what was it, Tezzeret?
That's right. Okay, so Tezzeret.
Tezzeret the Schemer?
Yes, Tezzeret the Metal Armed.
Arthur.
This is classic name. So Tezzeret the Metal Arm.
Tezzeret the Claw Toucher.
Yes. His, let's see, where we go. His -7, his ultimate says, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of combat on your turn, target artifact you control becomes an artifact creature with base power and toughness, 5/5. Say I've got a Tezzeret ultimate, right? And with my emblem and everything. And I have a Heart of Kirin and no creatures. And it comes to combat on my turn, and I say, Heart of Kirin, thou art now a 5/5.
Yep.
what is going on?
Heart of Cairn's a 5/5.
Okay. And it doesn't have flying or anything?
Does it have flying?
So, Heart of Cairn, we're going to read Heart of Cairn. It's a 2-cost vehicle, legendary artifact vehicle.
Yes.
Flying, vigilance, crew 3. You may remove a loyalty counter from a planeswalker you control rather than pay Heart of Cairn's crew cost.
Yes.
It has flying and vigilance. He doesn't change the abilities that are...
Still has flying. Heart of Kieran is a 5/5 flying vigilance.
Yep.
Sick.
And how about so somebody else worded it differently and asking us, does the base 5/5 for Tezzy's ultimate add to the artifact creature's power toughness or replace it?
It replaces it. It overwrites it. So if it was a creature, if it was like just looking down here below a filigree crawler, right? It's a 2/2. Mm-hmm. And he can touch that and he can turn it into a 5/5. Anytime something says actual power toughness or sort of the slash, mm-hmm. it basically overwrites the stuff that's in the box, and other plus ones or whatever will apply on top of it.
Okay.
So if there's something that's a native 0/0, say that comes with +1/+1 counters, Walking Ballista here, mm-hmm. Which enters the battlefield with +1/+1 counters and is a 0/0, Tezzeret can make it a 5/5, and then those +1/+1 counters will apply on top.
Hello.
That makes sense.
But if you, like, say you had a Consulate Dreadnought out for some reason, and you you touched it and made it a 5/5, now it's a 5/5. It's not a 7/11.
Correct. Because he overwrites the values that are down there.
Gotcha.
And crewing it doesn't make any difference. Crewing doesn't set power and toughness.
Still be a 5/5.
Yeah. Crewing just adds creature to its type line, and then it gets to see the power toughness that exists.
Gotcha. All right.
So here's a question from Gabe that's kind of... different, not technically about the cards in the set. If I open a normal and a masterpiece Ornithopter, but only want one in my deck, or like draft or sealed or, you know, whatever in this case, mm-hmm. can I use one as a proxy for the other?
Wait, what?
Well, so
no, that's a joke question.
Right? No. What he wants to do is he opened a masterpiece Ornithopter in regular
just
one
or
a masterpiece of Paradox Engine and also a regular Paradox Engine. He wants to play the normal Paradox Engine in his deck so that when he's shuffling, he only shuffles that. And then when he puts it in play, he goes to his sideboard and he pulls out the masterpiece and sets it on top of it.
Sick Robin!
There's nothing to say that you can't do that.
Yeah,
again. It's not even really a proxy. You can just say, I just didn't want to shuffle this one.
It's the same as if you were to use like a checklist card or something, right?
Pretty similar. Be aware that if it's in your sideboard space and it's not in your sealed pool, though, or in your standard deck, then and a judge does a deck check on you, they're going to consider it part of your deck. So you can't just play 4 regular Ornithopters and have a masterpiece Ornithopter that isn't in your deck.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So be aware of that.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you can totally just sub it in.
Masterpiece Ornithopter.
Fingers crossed.
That's so good. I would love to. That would be a great masterpiece.
You just open and you're like, get wrecked me.
Thanks.
Masterpiece Ornithopter is actually
probably,
a pretty reasonable amount.
It's
super pretty.
It's going to go in, like anybody who wants an affinity deck with masterpieces in it.
Yep.
Is going to get them.
And there's some number of people that just love Ornithopter to death.
Yeah.
And want to collect
exciting
versions of it.
They just love that little O2.
Well, it's been printed in a ton of sets, and it's still popular.
Yeah.
All right, here's a question from Caleb.
Yeah.
How are you the best regional coordinator? Also, Minnesota judges are the best. That's definitely a real question.
Yep, that's definitely a real question.
I think that I'm the tallest regional coordinator.
Oh.
And those two are directly correlated.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Height and awesomeness. Direct correlation. It unfortunately means that, like, Arthur Hallevay and Kyle are just... better than me, but I take what I can get.
Yeah, you know, you can't have them all.
Okay.
So the next question is about Winding Constrictor, which is a gold card in the set.
Yeah.
It's a little snack.
It's just a little snack.
Oh, the snack. This is the one that increases counters, right?
Yes. It's a snack with counters.
So they're wondering if it works with cards with entered the battlefield counters like Scrounging Bandar.
So to read Winding Constrictor, it's a black-green snake. It's a 2/3.
Snack.
If one or more counters would be placed on an artifact or creature you control, that many of those counters plus one are placed on that permanent instead. If you would get one or more counters, you get that many of those counters plus one instead. So it gives you bonus energy anytime that you get energy.
Ooh,
this is the card that talked about counters on you. Yes, this works with enters the battlefield counters. So He mentioned the Bandar. I'm just going to scroll down because I also want to talk about Walking Ballista at some point.
Sure.
Walking Ballista does both halves. It's an XX. It's a 0/0 for XX. Walking Ballista enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it. This is the counters being placed on it as it enters the battlefield. So you'll get twice as many counters from the...
Sick.
What?
Or sorry, +1. Not twice.
Not twice.
I'm thinking of it. There's a card from... there's a card from Return to Ravnica that doubles counters placed on creatures. And so...
Megan knows that card well.
Which card?
Is it Return to Ravnica where it doubles counters on something?
It's a 4/4. It's a 4/4 for black and 2.
Oh, never mind.
If counters would be placed on something you control.
Sounded like a Celestia card.
Oh, I was thinking of... No, you're thinking of Doubling Season.
Yeah, Doubling Season from original Ravnica and from Modern Masters.
Yes.
Yes, that's
what I opened in... Like, the first 4 or 5 Modern Masters drafts I did, I literally opened a Doubling Season every time.
So you opened a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true. And also, like, it worked out because I loved drafting stupid Thalid's decks.
Oh, yeah, that card's
fine
in Thalid's.
It was so great.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
We have Enchanted Stevening asks, can I use Improvise to set the X value of World of Invention cast with Rishkar's expertise? If so, does X have to be 2 or less?
So oh
God, what a question.
So Improvise doesn't set the cost. Anytime that something tells you to cast something without paying its mana cost, and you try to cast an X spell, you have to set the X to 0.
Okay.
The way that costs work is you figure out what the total cost is, and then you look up in the upper right hand corner, you do all the math, and you figure out what that number is going to be. That's the mana cost. That can get replaced with something else. Like Force of Will says, instead of paying the mana cost for a spell, you can exile a blue card from your hand and pay 1 life. So it takes that mana cost and throws it away and replaces it with this.
Mm-hmm.
Then you add any increasers and you decrease any reducers. Anything that says without paying its mana cost, though, says that while you're figuring that out, you set the X to 0 for any X's in the corner. So the expertises will all set X's to 0 at the time that you try to cast your spells for free.
All right.
Is that...
Yes.
Does that make sense?
X is 0.
X is 0. Somebody wants to know if we've ever won free tacos from Judge Rob. The answer is no. Not yet.
I've done Win a Taco events as casual fun events. And so, yes, we'll do some Win a Taco playing at some point.
What if my opponent has Exquisite Archangel on the battlefield and I have a you win the game effect?
So most you win the game effects are one shots. For instance, you have the...
Mechanized Production.
Yeah, like Mechanized Production. It has a triggered ability that says you win the game. Winning the game means all of your opponents lose the game. So the person who has the Exquisite Archangel wouldn't lose. Right?
Oh, God! Yeah.
You get
another shot at it the next time.
You get another crack at the Mechanized Production the next time.
Yeah, that's true.
All right.
And so...
They have boom, another Archangel, deal with it.
Well, they. What if you turned the Exquisite Archangel into an artifact and were using your own Mechanized Production to make Archangels?
Oh, my God.
No.
Perfect. Yeah, that's perfect.
Michael wants to know, what does the clause, quote, after you're done activating mana abilities, unquote, in the improvised reminder text mean, and why is it necessary?
So, I was talking a little bit technically about how costs are figured out. So the structure of casting a spell, you make all the decisions for it, and then you figure out how much it costs, and then you get to activate mana abilities, then you get to pay costs. The activate mana abilities is a special step that lets you activated abilities and triggered mana abilities. And it happens both during casting spells and activating abilities, and also during some other times. Like Ghostly Prison says that you have to pay 2 colorless mana to attack somebody. You get to activate mana abilities during attacks. It adds that special step to declaring attackers.
Okay.
Improvise just says that after you're done with that special mana ability step, during payment of costs, you can pay these costs in a different way than usual.
Okay.
It's a very rules geeky thing. What it means is that the number of things that you can use is locked in. So say that you have an artifact that you can sacrifice to add mana. Lotus Bloom and Extended is sacrifice and add 3 mana of any one color to your mana pool. Tap and sacrifice. It's a mana ability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it won't be around on the battlefield anymore to improvise with. if you used it for mana.
Okay. Yeah.
It's functionally what it's going to be.
Gotcha.
Most artifacts that make mana tap when they... they're sacrificed to make mana tap when they do it, though.
Gotcha.
So it usually won't be visible, but there's some creatures that sacrifice to make mana without tapping.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Okay, so then we have the next one, which says... where are we? There we go. Disallow says mana abilities can't be targeted. What's a mana ability? For example, can I counter Hidden Herbalist's Entered the Battlefield ability?
That's the one I was thinking of.
Okay, so...
those herbalists, by the way, are so hidden because they don't want to be caught by the authorities making pot in their parents' basement.
growing.
They've learned how to make gold. What is that called? Alchemy.
Maria does not understand drugs.
Pot alchemy.
Okay.
So mana abilities are any abilities that create mana and are either activated or triggered abilities.
Okay.
And they have to trigger from something that makes mana.
Okay.
So if I have a mana flare on the battlefield, it says whenever a player taps land for mana, they add one mana of that type to their mana pool of any type that land it produced to its mana pool. That's a triggered mana ability.
Okay.
Mana abilities have two other limitations: they can't target, and they can't be loyalty abilities from planeswalkers.
Okay.
So like Chandra, Torch of Defiance adds two red mana to your mana pool. That's not a mana ability because it's a loyalty ability.
Okay.
Mana abilities, you don't pass priority when you use them. You just get to use them, and you get to use them during, like I was mentioning, the casting of spells and activating abilities and during some other special times when you need to make mana.
So Elvish Mystic.
Yep.
Just a mana ability. It says, hey, I'm adding green, and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, it disallows not to be able to counter that.
What the heck? Yep.
So you can basically, there's a couple of things that make mana that you can target with disallow. Chandra, Torch of Defiance is the one that's going to come up.
Okay.
So the hidden herbalist is just like something different because they give you two. What is it? They give you two green mana when they enter the battlefield.
Let me look.
I'm trying to remember. They're so hidden. You know what I mean? Hidden herbalists, as a British person would say. So it's got revolt. When it enters the battlefield, if a permanent you controlled left the battlefield this turn, add green to your mana pool.
Okay, so that triggers from it entering the battlefield. That doesn't trigger from you making mana from something.
So that's an enter the battlefield ability.
It's an enter the battlefield trigger. It's not a mana ability.
Why are you not just countering that card if you have disallow?
Because maybe they flickered it with their Felidar.
Okay, that's fair.
And so they didn't cast it.
Okay.
All right.
And then it triggered revolt on itself because it left the battlefield and came back.
Oh, snap!
Which is the other neat thing about that Felidar. Flickering revolt things will trigger revolt with the Felidar. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
So this is another question. What happens on the stack when resolving an expertise spell if you cast a free spell with it, both the expertise and the free spell?
So let's walk through one that has some interesting stuff going on. We'll walk through Yeheni's expertise. Okay. Or no, we've already talked about that one. Let's talk about Sram's expertise.
Sram.
White 2, oh, man. Sorcery.
Do you know what I hate? Like how when you're trying to use Sram Wrap and it just keeps sticking to itself.
Sram Wrap. what if he was a rapper? His rapper name would be Sram Rap. Oh, it'd be so good.
All right. We might write you all a Sram Rap if you're lucky.
It's clearly the right choice.
Yes. Yeah, clearly. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
So Sram's expertise, white 2, sorcery. Create 3/1/1 colorless servo artifact creature tokens. You may cast a card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost.
Mm-hmm.
So you cast the expertise, it goes in the stack, your opponent's okay with it resolving, it goes to resolve. You create 3 servos, then while it's still in the stack, you get to cast this other spell.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a specific window to do it. So you cast that other spell, it goes in the stack above Saram's expertise. Then the expertise finishes resolving, it comes off the stack. Which means that now that thing is probably the only spell in the stack, because the expertise is a sorcery. You cast it during the resolution, but functionally, it means that you're casting it so that it's going to happen after the expertise.
Okay.
And then you'll get the chance to respond to your own spell if you need it, and your opponent will as well.
Okay. So they will have an opportunity, for example, to counter
They'll be able to disallow whatever you cast. All
right. sick.
If I have a Glint Sleeve Siphoner and another card that triggers on the beginning of upkeep. I don't know if that's
technically that's not a question. That's a statement.
It's a sentence. Glint Sleeve Siphoner. Mm-hmm. I must be questioning the, it must check for something. Let's find out. Glint. Oh, that's two words. Yes. Glint Sleeve. My sleeve.
It has a, I think it has a hyphen in the middle.
It does. That's it. Glint Sleeve Siphoner. It's a 1 and a black for 2/1 menace. So whenever Glint Sleeve Siphoner enters the battlefield or attacks, you get an energy. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may pay 2 energy. If you do, draw a card and lose 1 life.
So I think what they're looking for is like if you have multiple beginning of upkeep triggers, you get to choose
how to choose how to stack it.
And note that if your opponent has some triggers, it's going to go, your triggers go on the stack first. Theirs go on the stack.
So if they have triggers that go on the beginning of your upkeep.
Yeah, exactly.
Then there's gone.
Yeah, but you choose the order for them. So if you if you had something that gave you energy at the beginning of your upkeep.
So we kind of talked about this question a little bit before. What are the rules differences between Convoke and Improvise? Can I use Summoning Sick Artifact creatures to pay Improvise mana?
They behave basically exactly the same. The only limiting factor is that you can't use Improvise to pay for colored costs.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, so yes, you can.
Because, yeah, you can use Summoning Sick Artifacts, you can use Vehicles.
The same way you can use in a Summoning Sick creature to crew a vehicle.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. This question is, please explain what exactly the intervening if clause is in the revolt mechanic.
So there's this big thing about how all the revolt things that have triggers have intervening if clauses on them. So the Night Market Aeronaut, it's a 2/2 for black and 3 flying revolt. Night Market Aeronaut enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter. Oh no, sorry. That's not a trigger. That changes the way that it enters the battlefield. Vengeful Rebel, black and 2 for a 3/2. When Vengeful Rebel enters the battlefield, if a permanent you controlled left the battlefield this turn, target creature and opponent controls gets -3/-3 until end of turn. So Vengeful Rebel will only trigger if something left the battlefield before he entered it. He won't trigger, choose a target, and then decide whether or not that thing gets minused at the time that it resolves.
Yeah.
So you have to have bounced or flickered or had something die before Vengeful Rebel actually comes out. Intervening if triggers basically are triggers that both check. They check for a time and a condition to trigger. So when it enters the battlefield, if this is true. And then also they check again during the resolution of the trigger to see whether or not that thing is still true.
Gotcha.
Sorry, I'm laughing about this. Just somebody just wrote, I don't know why, but Judge Rob sounds like an 80s wrestler. Judge Rob!
Enter Judge the Rob!
Laid down his judgment! Would I have a big scales like tattooed across my face underneath each of my eyes?
Yeah.
This is a real question.
Absolutely.
Metallic Mimic, does it stack? That sounds like a YouTube video, like, does it blend? Metallic Mimic.
Does it stack?
And what is the rule of thumb for telling what does and doesn't stack?
Well, so there's two uses of the word stack they could mean. The stack is an actual thing in Magic. It's where spells go to.
Yes.
Where spells and activated
where
abilities.
Where spells go to resolve.
Yes.
The stack. Just where your spells go to resolve.
On my way to the stack. Just like them guards are like, on your way to the graveyard back in the day. No, they don't mean it in that way, I assume.
Well, they might. So
what's
I'm,
the other
I'm
way?
Gonna walk through the card. Do multiple instances of it apply separately?
Gotcha.
Just like multiple instances of trample don't do anything for you.
Right.
Gotcha.
Doesn't get super
this
trample.
This card has trample.
Next turn, it's going to have trample again.
Yeah. So Metallic Mimic, it's a 2/1 shapeshifter for 2 colorless mana. It's an artifact creature. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Metallic Mimic is the chosen type in addition to its other types. Each other creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it.
Oh.
So... yes, it'll put 2+1/+1 counters on. If there's you have 2 Metallic Mimics, both on Warrior, and you have a Warrior attempt to enter the battlefield, it'll get 2+1/+1 counters.
Very cool.
2 additional +1/+1 counters.
Yeah.
Note that none of these abilities are triggers, and none of them use the stack.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
it just the creature just does enter with the counters.
Yeah. Metallic Mimic replaces entering the battlefield with. Entering the battlefield a little differently, and then it replaces those creatures entering the battlefield with entering the battlefield a little differently.
All right.
Well, that's given me an idea for a new YouTube video.
Does it stack?
Does it stack?
Anyway, yeah, that seems to be all the questions that were submitted.
Yeah.
But great questions, everybody. You Thank asked. You so much.
Judge Rob answered.
Yep.
Actually, that is what happened.
Everybody, it's time for that moment you've all waited for on the edge of your seats with bated breath. The cutest card.
I can already tell you, I am personally going to revolt when you announce this.
Megan revolts almost every time I name the cutest card, but the best
part... It's true, because you know what? I'm looking out for the people. You just sit up on your cute pedestal and, you know, rain down cute judgment on cards.
I do.
And I am here amongst the people saying, we know what is cute, too, and we will not simply be told.
Well, I'm going to tell you anyway. You know,
You can try.
So here's the first thing which I must clarify. Judge Rob has pulled up Regavan, the monkey token.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because it's super cute.
And it's wearing, look at it. Is it wearing goggles?
Yeah, he's totally wearing goggles.
Look at the monkey wearing goggles.
So when he flies his ship at high speed.
He doesn't get wind in his eyes. So there's a gremlin token this set as well. This is what I'm going to say. If a token could win cutest card, the gremlin token would win cutest card. It even beats this monkey.
What? Nope. Get out.
I'm serious.
This gremlin is not wearing goggles.
Look at him though. Look at him.
No, he's just another gremlin.
He's sitting on a horde.
He's just a gremlin sitting on a horde of things under a bridge.
He thinks he's a dragon.
That's right. Do you know, if that's cute, he thinks he's when people. I go on a walk by a river, I'm cute.
Do you steal a horde of stuff?
Yes.
And sit on it like a dragon?
Yes, I do.
So here's the thing. This is irrelevant because a token cannot be called the cutest card of a set.
Ugh.
It just can't.
Tokens aren't cards.
Because it's not a card. Judge Rob is sitting right here. I couldn't offend him in that manner. No. Second point is that this may have been the hardest, cutest card decision that I've ever, ever had. There are so many cute cards in this set. There's an adorable Snek. There is a little dragon from, you know, Jurassic Park. There's, of course, a lot of gremlins. They were not grubs, though, so they, you know, weren't ever super in contention because the grubs are really my gremlin love.
One final announcement, which is that those of you who would like to leave this tyrannical empire with me when this is announced, just let me know and we will revolt.
Here's something that's new this time with the cutest card.
Uh-huh.
It is in a color that has, to my knowledge... never received a cutest card honor.
Uh-huh.
Except for some, like, M set when it was Black Cat.
Uh-huh.
And that's right, it's in black, which is very unusual. Very unusual. Okay.
Whatever.
Anyway, the cutest card for this set, drum roll please.
I refuse.
Is Renegade's Getaway. It's a little robot friend farting out some smoke to confuse the consulate coming to get him, and he's just tiny, and he's just like, I'm so mad. And I shouldn't say farting. It's coming out of his top that looks like a little organ at church.
Yeah.
And he's sending up his smoke signals. He's pretty adorable.
Those of you who think that it should be the monkey with goggles or the giant deer with a tiny person on its leg.
So I think that he's actually a walking smoke bomb for the person that's hiding in the smoke.
Oh, I see. That's pretty
cute. Like the person behind the renegade?
Yes. And this is just a little robot.
And here, everybody who knows me out there might know that I love robots. And Cogwork Assembler is an honorable mention. And the reason I didn't choose Cogwork Assembler is because the Assembler is not the cutest card. It is the things that he has assembled in his hands, which are really, really cute.
Judge Rob, find me the deer.
Megan is now freaking out because...
Find me the deer.
She just learned tonight about High Spire?
High Spire
so
Infusion.
Did you. So did you. You didn't know. High Spire Infusion. It's you. So High Spire Artisan is a person holding a tiny deer in its hand.
Yeah.
Yep. And then High Spire Infusion is that deer holding a tiny High Spire Artisan in its hand.
It's so cute.
let me look him up. High Spire Infusion. I have to look at him close.
And see, here's High Spire Artisan. Look at that big deer with a tiny person. So cute.
It's pretty cute.
And there's a cute Snek. Look, but, I'm just saying, if you are tired of having decisions made for you, You want to make decisions on your own. You know where to find me.
I just think that that little robot, smoke bomb robot's pretty cute.
There's an adorable fish, Shipwreck Moray.
Shipwreck Moray is also very cute. Look, these cards are all cute. It's like a beauty contest. You know, none of them are ugly.
Oh, you mean it's a flawed system? Based on value judgments?
Anyway, Megan's supposed to name her grossest card
by people who just took power for themselves.
But she decided not to.
That's right.
I gotta say that there aren't very many.
Oh, what is that?
Yeah.
Gross cards. In okay. This set, but
fine. The grossest card is Fen Holler.
Okay. It's hauling some Fen.
It's a giant insect.
The Foundry Hornet is scary to me.
It's scary, but it's pretty.
It is pretty.
Is it scariest card? No. Unlike some of us, I can make my decision well.
So our cutest card goes right into our cutest card coloring book, which is being made by the wonderful Steve Raffle, and coming out hopefully very soon. We've seen the drawings and they're just spectacular. Mm-hmm. So get ready for that to land in your hands in the near future. Yay. I'm excited about it.
As am I.
It's going to be the most adorable thing that you've ever put colors on.
I was hoping you were going to say it's the most adorable thing you've ever put in your mouth. For those people that like to eat their coloring books.
I mean, any children under the age of 5. Well, everybody, that's this episode of Magic the Amateuring. Thanks again to Judge Rob.
You're very welcome.
If people have questions for you, where can they hit you up?
They can send me an email, robit@gmail.com. Also swing through the comments on this if you have questions, and I'll try to answer them as best I can, but I'll probably only hit them in the afternoons.
Yeah. He's referring to the video, so when the video version goes up, check that out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Big thanks again to, of course, all of our Patreon sponsors and Card Kingdom. Like we said, sweet contest there this month, and
you've got to get that box singles. You have to pre-order the box before the set comes up.
Okay.
It's a pre-order of Aether Revolt boxes.
Do you know when the drawing is actually happening? Is it happening like on the day the set goes live?
We do not know.
Okay.
Go to cardkingdom.com/MDA.
They'll be able to tell you.
They will tell you the words. Get that box. But yeah, I'm looking really forward to playing the pre-release this weekend. Megan's got bigger fish to fry, aka graduating from a graduate program, so no big deal. And me,
you can do that any day of the week.
So hopefully we'll see some people out there, and we'll talk about pre-release experience on the next show, which is always really fun to download and see if I get a better sealed pool than my Brazella pool from a few sets ago.
Do you just want everything?
I do.
Just want it all?
Do you want to open multiple Heart of Kirin in your sealed pool?
Yes, please. With the elephant. I'm definitely going to crew with that elephant if it happens I can do that. That's so cool.
Wow.
Of course, find us on Twitter @MTAcast. Our website's magicTheAmateuring.com. We're on Facebook /MTAcast, YouTube, Twitter, Discord if you're a patron member. We're on everything, basically. If you can't find us, you know, I don't know, you're living under a rock.
Never mind. I'm not going to say it.
What are you going to say? Why you're wearing a skin suit?
No. Nope. I was going to say, for some reason, I don't know why your pants are in a bundle.
But like, he's in a wallet.
No, but like none of that makes any sense.
I don't know why your pants are in a bundle.
And like that doesn't contextually work for the situation either. All right, everybody. Good night.
See you next time.